Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to the Accomplish Radio Show. I'm your host, Darlene Willman, the publisher of Accomplish Magazine, bringing you another incredible guest to our show today. And by the way, we're working on our next issue of Accomplish Magazine, which we're hoping should be released sometime next week. And of course, the topics that we covered for January was on productivity, time management, goal setting, and organizing tips. And, of course, we'll be covering the topics for February as well, which is on relationships, both personal and professional. And you can get your free subscription over at AccomplishMagazine.com. And if this is your first time joining us on our show today, we're really glad you found us. In fact, we're celebrating over 17,000 listeners that have tuned into our show. And we're coming up on our 100th show. Get this, I just figured it out. It's on Valentine's Day. What a perfect day to celebrate. So we want to encourage our listeners to call into the show that day and, you know, celebrate with us and give a shout out to your loved ones and, you know, just celebrate Valentine's Day on the air. And if you'd like to hear our show again that's broadcasting today, or any of our shows for that matter, you can actually hear today's show, which will be rebroadcast at AccomplishMagazine.com, but it's also available in iTunes, so you can go pick up this show and take it with you, listen to it over and over again. Make sure you check out our new fan page. It's on Facebook, where we share all of our great discussions about your accomplishments, and we want to know what's been happening in your life and where you're headed and what you're doing. So, as you know, I usually interview someone new every day on the Accomplish Radio Show. And, you know, we broadcast every weekday morning at 10 a.m. Central, which is 11 Eastern and 8 Pacific. And for the entire month of February, we're bringing you experts on relationships. And today's guest is actually a fitness coach. We're not talking about your body. We're talking about your marriage. His name is Mort Fertel, and he lives with his wife and five children, including triplets, in Baltimore, Maryland. And he is a world authority on the psychology of relationships and has an international reputation for saving marriages. In addition to working with couples, he teaches individuals how to single-handedly transform their marital situation. People from all over the world schedule private telesessions with Mort Fertel and seek his counsel by joining the Marriage Fitness Teleboot Camp. He is an author of the Marriage Fitness Audio Learning System and the creator of Marriage Fitness Home Flex, the most comprehensive relationship home learning kit in the world. Over 100,000 people a year subscribe to his free e-zine. And, you know, Mort has been featured as an expert on ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, and the Fox News Network. He is also a frequent guest on talk radio programs. His breakthrough program, Marriage Fitness, appeared in the New York Times, Chicago Tribune, Los Angeles Times, USA Today, Family Circle, Psychology Today, Ladies Home Journal, Glamour Magazine, wow, Parent and Child Magazine, Philadelphia Inquirer, Library Journal, Women's Health, just so many others. I'm just amazed at everything that Mort has actually done. And his program is endorsed by marriage counselors, therapists, relationship experts, and mental health professionals. And he's helped save thousands of marriages. And Mort actually graduated from the University of Pennsylvania and was the CEO of an international nonprofit organization and a former marathon runner. Oh, my gosh. Well, welcome to our show today, Mort Fertel. Are you with us?
I am. Thank you so much.
Wow. Let me say, first of all, congratulations on all your success. It's obvious you have developed your expertise and you've become so highly accomplished. I'm really honored to have you on our show today. What a privilege.
Yeah. Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. I appreciate the introduction. I hope I can live up to it.
I'm sure you can. You know, I've been following you from a distance. Somehow I stumbled on you and I've been watching some of the things that you've been creating and listening to. And, you know, what I want to do today is sort of cover some of the things that you're mostly known for. And, you know, this is just I think everybody who's been married has experienced some ups and downs. I mean, I know that for a fact. I live in a marriage that has had those ups and downs, so that's probably one reason why I was seeking, you know, what you offer. And, you know, I love the fact how you offer a solution for, you know, almost every marriage problem. So, again, I can't wait to talk further about what you share and what you do.
Okay, let's do it.
All right. Well, you know, I thought we could talk briefly about the seven secrets to fixing your marriage, which is something that you offer the full series that's available on your website. Is it marriagemax.com? Is that the correct website?
Yes, marriagemax.com. Uh-huh.
Fabulous. So let's get right into it. And, you know, some of the topics that you talk about, you know, the first thing you talk about is, you know, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. So you want to share what you mean by that?
Sure. It's not so much what I mean as much as what the spouse who's uttering those words, those dreaded words, means, because that's what so many people, unfortunately, who are running into marriage problems are hearing. You know, they wake up one day and their spouse shocks them after 10, 20, 30 years with, you know, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. And it's such a commonly uttered phrase, and it's so many people's nightmare. You know, what is their spouse saying? And what does, you know, what does it mean? What's going on in the relationship? So it's a very big story, and of course, you know, we don't have a whole lot of time here, but I'll give you just some nuggets. First of all, you know, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. I think what a person is saying is that I care for you. We have a history together. We have a life together. We even have children together, maybe. You know, our lives have been intertwined for years. But I don't feel that sense of deep connection the way I think I should. And very often, the reason why a person is realizing this is because they are feeling that deep sense of connection with somebody else. In other words, very often, a spouse is uttering those words to their husband or wife because they're having an affair. Or at least an emotional affair, and the phrase that dreaded phrase is really, from their perspective, the one who's uttering it, is coming from a place of comparing and contrasting. They're saying it from the context of this new experience that they're having with this new person that they're feeling, you know, deeply connected to. They've you know, quote, fallen in love. And they don't feel that for their spouse anymore. And, of course, it's, you know, it's a little bit of a ridiculous comparison. I mean, it's the easiest thing in the world to fall in love, right? I mean, it takes no effort. It takes no wisdom. I mean, anybody can fall in love, and pretty much everybody does. But to maintain that connection throughout years in marriage, that takes wisdom, that takes effort, that takes intelligence, and not everybody can do that. And so very often what people are doing is they're, you know, sort of opting for the easy way, you know, which is to have that experience in a new relationship, which, again, you know, just look at the expression falling in love. You're out of control. Something's happening to you. It's a complete passive experience. And, you know, I think there's even a song, you know, any idiot can fall in love, and every idiot does. and it really doesn't take anything. But to stay in love, to maintain that sense of connection with a spouse for many years is a challenge. And many people don't want to put in the time and the effort, nor do they even have the wisdom to appreciate how to go about it.
You know, Mort, there's something I wanted to ask you before we got so much into this, because I really like what you're saying, because this is so important for our audience to understand, especially, you know, when we're focused on trying to accomplish a lot of things in our life. And, you know, having a successful marriage is a huge accomplishment. I mean, I truly see that. Those, you know, those people that have had, you know, their 50, you know, year anniversaries and all those things that you share with somebody, because it takes so much work and effort. But I wanted to ask you, why did you start doing this to begin with? Why did you start really helping people with their marriage? What was it that kind of turned that for you?
Oh, boy. You're not going to make me cry, are you?
No, I promise.
Yeah, no. You may have heard that, you know, my profession really comes from a very personal place. I don't do this just as a matter of work, but it's really a mission, and it really became a mission because of my own personal experience. My wife and I, you know, we started out, I guess, like everybody else, you know, madly in love, and you know, we would talk all night and exchange thoughtful gifts and have cute names for each other. And, you know, had a pretty normal and healthy marriage for a while. And then we, tragedy struck. We had a son who died when he was just a week old. And then just a short time later, we had twin girls who died also. In a relatively short period of time, over the course of a few years, we lost three children. And it was a very, very difficult, traumatic experience. And it rocked our marriage. It really threw us into a tailspin. Now, before I go on, I just want to say, I mean, I appreciate you asking about my personal situation. I'm going to share more of it. But I want to continually, you know, intertwine it with how it relates to everybody else's situation. Because that's really what we want to do here, is try to help other people. And so I just want to say that, you know, I realize that what I just described is an unusual way for a marriage to break down. I mean, it's not often that people, you know, have that kind of tragic experience. But it really doesn't matter, you know, what causes a marriage to get derailed. I'm sharing with you my story. Everybody's got their own story. You know, sometimes it's an affair. Sometimes it's financial stress. Sometimes it's, you know, in-law problems. And sometimes it's really nothing you can put your finger on. It's just, you know, time and routine that kind of chips away at the excitement that was once in the marriage. And before you know it, two people wake up and they feel like roommates or completely disconnected or whatever the case may be. So anyway, I'm sharing with you a little bit about, you know, how my marriage got derailed, but again, everybody's got a different story, but it really lands us all in the same place, which is, you know, with a boring or even failed marriage, and the question is what to do then. So anyway, we did pretty much what a lot of people do when they find themselves in a broken marriage situation. You know, my wife learned about Mars, I learned about Venus. You know, we sought traditional counseling when they, you know, ask you what's wrong, and you sit there in the office, you know, throwing mud at each other and, you know, arguing back and forth about the issues. And we found that kind of traditional counseling process just really mired us in all the negativity of our situation. You know, the argument came, you know, the argument just was moved from our kitchen table to somebody's office. And the more we were asked to deal with the negativity and the problems, we found that the worst things got. You know, we were just kind of almost cultivating, you know, all the negative feelings and all the anger. And as I said, we'd be slinging mud back and forth at each other, and nothing was really helping. And we were just really frustrated. And, you know, there were times when I was working on trying to improve things and my wife could care less, and there were times when she was working to improve things and I could care less, and there were brief moments when we were both working on it together. But whatever we were working on, given the guidance we were getting, whether it be from a book or from a counselor, it was all focused on, like, okay, what's wrong and how are you going to fix what's wrong? And, again, every time we did that, we found ourselves just, you know, so overwhelmed with all of the negativity of our situation. And it wasn't working. In fact, it made things worse. I can remember walking into some of those sessions feeling 1,000 times worse than we did when we walked in. And I thought, gosh, what kind of process is this? We're coming to these professionals, you know, paying all this money and spending this time, things are supposed to be getting better. But they weren't. And then we decided that this wasn't working, and we weren't going to do it anymore. And we said, you know, let's just, it's kind of a longer story as to how we got to this place, but to make a long story short, we decided that we weren't going to talk about the problems anymore. We weren't even going to try to resolve them. And we were just going to try to just simply be good to each other. I know that sounds so simple and so simplistic compared to the complexity of the problems that were being dealt with, but that's what we decided. We said we're just going to be, like, try to start over and let go of all the negativity and just start to be good to each other. And we started to just do positive things, and almost instantly, it made such a tremendous difference. It, like, kind of stopped the bleeding, so to speak. And all of a sudden, we weren't constantly being tortured by all the negativity and the problems and the pain and the screaming back and forth and the mudslinging. And it just stopped the bleeding. And it even started to sort of build goodwill between us. We started to like each other just a little bit again. And that process continued for months. And the more we did it, the more disciplined we were about not bringing up the past and all the problems, and instead just focusing on positive. Instead of trying to fix what, here's a nice way to say it. Instead of trying to fix what was wrong, we were trying to make new things right.
Oh, I like
and
that.
For us, that was so much more effective, had so much more of a positive impact on our situation. And it worked. I mean, I don't know how else to say it except that it totally worked. We really reconnected. We maintained those positive things. And, you know, here we are many, many, many years later, you know, very, very happy with a beautiful family. And essentially, you know, when all of that was over, we looked at each other and we said, like, wow, like, what we have done here is what millions of other people in broken marriages ought to be able to do also, but they're being so misguided. Again, the traditional counseling process is to focus on what's wrong and try to fix those problems. But the fact of the matter is that 75% of people that enter a traditional marriage counseling process report that they are worse off or divorced a year later. And so it just doesn't work. It's not that it just doesn't work for us. It's generally speaking, it does not work. And to me, it makes total sense that it doesn't work. Because if you're in a horrible relationship situation and all your energy goes into what's horrible, it's just going to be more horrible. And So the process we went through, at the end, we decided that we would, really devote ourselves to figuring out what it was we actually did and developing a system so that other people could go through the process also to save their marriage. And that's really the origin of marriage fitness.
Wow. Mort, thank you so much for sharing that and you know, telling us your own personal story. It is so impactful. So powerful for people to understand that this is, marriage is a huge factor in our life. It's, you know, the person that we, you know, turn to and we confide in the most, that's our strongest relationship. And I believe that is what you're talking about by redirecting and basically looking at what's going right and moving forward. Because we do have a tendency to go back and say, oh, well, you did this, 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 and this, and, you know, it's not fixed yet, and, you know, how do I know you're not going to do it again? And, you know, a lot of it comes down to the trust factor, and that kind of brings us into our next, you know, topic that you'd share with your 7 secrets to fixing your marriage, is, you know, how do you rebuild that? What's, you know, where do you go once it's already been destroyed by saying a lot of empty promises?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big question that that we address in the Marriage Fitness Program, which is how to rebuild trust. Because in most, not all, but in most broken marriages, one of the things that's broken is trust between two people. Sometimes it's the kind of trust that's broken because of infidelity or financial breaches or lies. And sometimes it's the kind of trust that's broken that's more subtle, meaning that I can't trust you to take care of me. I can't trust you to be good to me. I thought you were going to love me, and I don't feel loved. That's often not articulated. When someone has that experience, it's often not articulated as trust, but there really is an element of trust there. And so I guess your question is, you know, how do you rebuild trust? Well, again, that's a big question and a big story. But in short, I think the most important thing to appreciate about trust is that trust is not a choice. You don't choose to trust your spouse. Trust is a natural, spontaneous experience that's born of trustworthy behavior. So if your husband behaves in a trustworthy way, then you'll trust him. You don't decide to. You don't choose to. You just do. So, too, if he behaves in a not trustworthy way, you won't trust him. You didn't choose to. You didn't decide to. You just don't. This may sound philosophical, but if you think about it, it's actually incredibly practical, because very often people think that that I have to decide or I have to choose to trust my husband. Sometimes the husband will come to the wife and say, would you just trust me already? And it's really a very foolish dynamic. It's an ignorant dynamic to ask somebody to trust you, because the person can't make that choice. Whether or not your spouse trusts you is not up to them. It's up to you. If you behave in a trustworthy way, they will trust you. It's just the way it is. They don't have a choice. We don't decide whether or not to trust somebody. It's just the experience we have of them. It's like the classic example that I like to give to illustrate this is, you know, let's say, God forbid, a man comes home, he had too much to drink, he had an affair, and he's so feeling so bad, he admits to his wife, the mistake that I made, I blew it, I had too much to drink, I slept with this woman, I'm really sorry, I'm totally remorseful. You know, please forgive me and trust me. So let's say for discussion purposes that she, although she's hurt with the purest of heart and best intent, she says, okay, I understand you won't do it again. I trust you. She just lied to him. She may want to trust him. That's a different story. But that she does trust him, not possible. He just betrayed her. And I can prove that she doesn't trust him, because the next day, if he says he'll be home at 6 o'clock and the clock strikes 6:01, I can guarantee you she will have just experienced 60 seconds of not trusting him. Where is he? What's he doing? And she will experience that distrust. And so it's one thing to want to trust somebody, but whether or not we do really totally depends not on us, but on them, their behavior. And so if the trust, with that foundation laid, I'll circle back and answer your question more directly, which is, you know, when trust is broken in a marriage, how do you restore it? Well, each person, the husband and the wife, have to ask themselves, what's my contribution to the broken trust in the marriage? What have I done? How have I behaved to breach the trust with my spouse? And how and what patterns of behavior do I need to establish consistently so that I will be trusted again? In other words, what have I done that's been not trustworthy? And how do I begin immediately to consistently behave in a trustworthy way? And if they do begin, and if they are consistent, then they'll be trusted. It might take a number of months, but it'll happen.
That's a big piece of the relationship, the whole trust factor. And, you know, the whole part of, and it's like you want to completely rely on the other person to always, you know, come from that place of integrity. But they're probably, you know, I even think more, and I don't know your opinion on this, but sometimes just the omission or leaving things out intentionally can also be a form of, you know, breaking down that trust factor, even though it's not like a direct lie, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny you say that, because when I talk about, you know, being trustworthy, most people have a pretty simplistic understanding of what that means, and they think, oh, yeah, I'm trustworthy. But my definition of trustworthiness is a little bit different than most, and I'll just offer you one element of that definition that relates to your comment about, you know, leaving things out or something like that. You see, one of the pillars of trustworthiness is to be beyond suspicion. Most people think that as long as I do the right thing, then I'm being trustworthy. But it's not true. You don't have to make a mistake to breach the trust in a relationship. You just have to look like you're making a mistake. When a person behaves in a manner that is suspicious, the person observing that suspicious behavior loses trust in them. They don't have to have done anything wrong, but nonetheless, it tears at the trust in the relationship. And so one of the pillars of trustworthiness is to be, not just to do the right thing, that's true also, that's obvious, but to take action so that you're constantly beyond suspicion. So I'll give you a couple of examples, because it's a fascinating sort of relationship dynamic, and again, something most people don't appreciate. I was on a session, I did a private session with a couple last night, and he had an affair, but he severed the relationship, and they're on their path to reconciliation, trying to rebuild trust. And I was explaining this concept of being beyond suspicion, and his wife could totally relate to this. She jumped right in, and she said, you know, that's exactly what I experienced with my husband's cell phone. So I said, what do you mean? So she said, well, you know, my cell phone, I leave it all over, on the kitchen table, on the counter, you know, on the night table, wherever it is, that's just where it is. And if it rings, I don't run to get it. I mean, if my husband answers it or nobody answers it, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's not something I'm protective of. My husband, that cell phone is always in his coat pocket. Always. He would never leave it out. He would never leave it out. And I feel that it would be, for him, horrific if I went to answer his cell phone. I don't care if he answers my cell phone. So his response, wow. She's very suspicious of the way he treats his cell phone. Now, his response to this was, oh, my gosh, you got to be kidding me. This is silly. I keep my cell phone in my coat pocket so that I always know where it is. I'm an anal person, and if I always keep things in a particular place, that's just where I keep my cell phone. I'm not hiding anything. I'm not talking to anybody. You see, he's explaining himself. He wants to be right. And I explained to him, you don't understand. The point is not whether or not something inappropriate is happening on your cell phone. The point is that it looks like something inappropriate is happening on a cell phone, and that is tearing at the fabric of the trust in your relationship, and therefore your responsibility is to modify your behavior in order to be beyond suspicion. And he couldn't, he was having a hard time getting this, because from his perspective, I'm not doing anything wrong. And if my wife has a problem with this, let her talk to a therapist and resolve it. But that's selfish. That's basically saying, you know, when you do the right thing, your conscience is clear. But if you do the right thing in a way that is suspicious, it's causing somebody else to have ill feelings, and if you don't care about that, that's insensitive. Our responsibility to our husband or wife is to be sensitive to them and to be willing to modify our behavior to accommodate their feelings, even if we're not doing anything wrong. And so, you know, he was saying he felt that this was childish. You know, I have to treat my cell phone differently. This is childish. In my mind, it's not childish at all. In fact, on the contrary, I think it takes a tremendous amount of emotional maturity and sophistication to appreciate how certain things can give rise to suspicion. And it takes a certain amount of emotional maturity to be willing to modify your behavior in order to not be suspicious. And it's childish and emotionally immature to look at that and say, it's silly. I shouldn't have to do anything else with my cell phone. But he's really missing the point. It's not about the cell phone. It's about being sensitive, and it's about being beyond suspicion.
That's such an incredible example because of, you know, the way you put that. So riddle me this. How would you get them to change that habit then? You know, just point blank say, you know, come on, let's, you know, if you're hiding your phone and that, you know, looks suspicious and he's in this mindset of keeping it the way it is, what would you suggest? I mean, how do you get your spouse to really change? You can't. I mean, I don't think I can.
Well, you can't get your spouse to change, but what I mean I can tell you what I can tell you exactly what happened last night. I mean we succeeded to do it. I explained to him. I mean, of course, we had more time than we have here, but I essentially explained to him the importance of being beyond suspicion. I helped him appreciate how when you behave in a suspicious manner, it breaches the trust in a relationship. I explained to him that the definition of suspicious is that it doesn't look right. It's not that it's not right. In other words, nobody's accusing you of doing anything wrong. I believe you. I believe you. I believe that there's nothing to this. But we're not after the truth here. This is not a courtroom. It's not the truth that matters. It's people's feelings that matter. And your wife feels threatened by this. She feels this is suspicious. And your responsibility, our responsibility as a spouse, is to be willing to modify our behavior out of sensitivity to our spouse's feelings. That's one of the most important qualities in a relationship. And, of course, in prior sessions, I've spent a lot of time speaking to him about this. So it wasn't a new concept. He's, you know, he's on board with the importance of being sensitive. And
That's a big piece.
That's a big piece, yeah. And that's a tough one because very often people, they want to be right. And wanting to be right, needing to be right, oftentimes gets in the way of being sensitive. Because sensitivity is really about someone else's feelings. And being right are about the facts. Facts and right belong in a courtroom. Feelings and sensitivity belong in a marriage. And too often people are driven by facts and truth in a marriage. And who knows, maybe they're driven by feelings and sensitivity in a courtroom. but unless you've got the right stuff in the right place, you can really get messed up. So anyway, you know, he saw the importance of him changing that pattern of behavior to accommodate his wife, and he's going to do it. And we talked to his wife about, you know, why does it look suspicious? What is it that's suspicious? How could he handle his cell phone in a way that wouldn't be suspicious? And he's going to try to do it. And my guess is it'll work. And my guess is also after he does, he'll feel good that he changed to accommodate his wife because she'll appreciate him for doing it. I'll give you another quick example. You know, I do these house calls all over the world where I fly to a person's location and I spend a full day with the couple. Very often when they live too far from the airport, instead of wasting time traveling back and forth, they'll get a suite at an airport hotel, and we'll meet at the suite. So I spend some of the time with the couple together, but throughout the day I also spend time with each, the husband and the wife, privately, one-on-one. I actually had a house call on Tuesday in Dallas. So as I always do, I said to the couple when it was time for me to spend time alone with the wife, I said, I'd like to spend a little bit of time privately speaking to your wife. You know, would that be okay with both of you? Yes, of course. And so as he started to walk out of the room, the hotel room, I picked up a chair, I escorted him out, and I took the chair and propped open the hotel room door. And I explained to both of them before he left, I have a policy not to be in a hotel room, or any room for that matter, alone with a woman other than my wife. Now, why do I do that? I mean, is it because I think this woman's going to seduce me? Is it because I think, you know, I'm going to get horny and jump her? No, it's crazy. I have a happy marriage and I'm working.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look right. Mort Fertel should not be in a hotel room alone with a woman other than his wife. And this wife, who's having marital problems, shouldn't be in a hotel room alone with Mort Fertel when her husband is, you know, in the lobby. It doesn't look right. And so it's just a small initiative that I take to help me and this woman be beyond suspicion.
Wow. That's fabulous. I love that. And it just makes so much sense for you to just, you know, I think what you're doing more is you're opening the eyes to a lot of people. The people listening to our show today are going to say, wow, there is a lot to what you're sharing and what you're discussing that a lot of times we just take for granted. We don't think about the next step. We're not going beyond suspicion.
It's so true.
I hope that people will start looking at it differently.
What you're saying is so true. You know, people hear this stuff and they're like amazed. I mean, they just never thought about what does it really mean to be trustworthy? What are the kinds of behaviors that breed trust or distrust? And, you know, succeeding in a marriage, it's just like succeeding in anything else. You have to know how to do it, right? I mean, if you want to play top-notch tennis or you want to succeed a professor or you want to be a doctor, I mean, let's face it. You know, there's a manual or there's coaching or there's a system to succeed with whatever it is that you want to succeed at. And somehow people have this impression that, you know, they're just going to fall in love, they're going to get married, and everything's going to be on autopilot and work out fine. And it just doesn't work that way. You know, it really, to succeed in a marriage requires training, it requires education, it requires wisdom. And, yeah, when I talk about these things, like, you know, people, they have this totally abstract concept of what trust is in a relationship. And when you begin to really break it down and understand what the different components are, you have such a more refined and sophisticated appreciation for really how to go about it. And I just touched on, that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there, you know, as I mentioned, there's three pillars of trust. I just mentioned the one, and I mentioned it for a few minutes. It's really, you know, it's even more complicated than that. But yeah, I mean, you're bringing up a really good point, which is that, you know, there are laws of relationships, just like there's laws of gravity. And you know, if you understand the laws of gravity, you know, you can build a rocket ship and go to the moon. You can accomplish great things. If you don't, you'll crash. It's the same in a marriage.
Wow, this is so good. I'm just amazed at the things that you've shared in such a short amount of time. It left me with wanting more. I'm sure our audience is going, oh my gosh, we have got to get on board. And, you know, you have so many different things that you've created to get that message out, to share your, you know, your words of wisdom, your resources, all your knowledge, you know, and we're just covering just, you know, the seven secrets to fixing your marriage here. We've got just a couple more, and we're almost to the end of our show, so I want our audience to make sure that you go to marriagemax.com and, you know, subscribe to receive that. He has,
it's,
you know,
free,
some, so many things to share. Yeah, absolutely.
It's free. It's free. The seven secrets to fixing your marriage, by the way, is free. All you have to do is put in your name and email address at marriagemax.com, and I'll send it to you. You know, and then, of course, if you want to join the full marriage fitness program, that's the, you know, there is a fee for that, of course. But
sure.
If, you know, if your marriage is really in crisis and you really need help, I mean, for sure, get the free stuff, and you might want to consider joining the program as well.
Absolutely. You know, I want to touch briefly on, you know, you talk about the apology section of your fixing your marriage and how do you approach that. And then, you know, we'll be wrapping up here in just a couple of minutes. But, you know, and we probably won't even have a chance to go through all the other, you know, things. But what's your advice on how to say you're sorry?
Maybe the most, you know, with the few minutes we have, maybe the most helpful thing that I could say in response to that is not so much how to say you're sorry as much as to impress upon people how not to say it. Because that I think I can do in a few minutes. How to actually do it, I don't know if I can do in the few minutes we have. But most people, you know, when they are apologizing to their spouse, in their mind it's very simple. I'm just going to say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I did this. I'm sorry I did that. And as if those two magic words are somehow going to wipe the slate clean and enable your spouse to forgive you and to feel about you the way they did before you offended them. But if you think about it, those two words, I'm sorry, they really don't help your spouse, the offended, heal at all from the offense. In other words, it doesn't do anything to help them get to a place of healing. And so, and they often feel that your interest in saying I'm sorry is selfish. In other words, they often feel that what you want in saying I'm sorry is to be forgiven and to wipe the slate clean and to get out of the doghouse. And but you're the offender. They're the offended. And so whatever you do, again, I'm not sure we're going to be able to get to that, but whatever it is you do to apologize effectively, it can't be about you. It has to be about them. They're the offended. But again, I'm sorry is not really about them. Nothing's really happened to help them heal from this event. In fact, on the contrary, very often a person's real agenda when they're apologizing is selfish, meaning that they want to wipe the slate clean, they want to get out of the doghouse, they want their spouse to call off the attorney and not file for divorce, they want them to end the affair, that, you know, whatever it is they want, it's their selfish agenda that's motivating the apology, and their spouse very often feels that. And, you know, add to that that, you know, the words I'm sorry, it's one of those expressions in the English language that's not just an expression of an apology, but it's really a demand for forgiveness. You know, it's like when I say thank you, you're kind of compelled to say you're welcome. How are you? I'm, you know, fine. How are you? And it's just certain expressions that they're also demands or solicitations for a response. So you're saying I'm sorry, and now there's a spouse on the other end who's deeply hurt. Nothing's really happened or changed that would empower them to forgive you, and yet they're feeling that you've engaged them in this conversation in a way that they feel responsible for saying, I forgive you. But again, the chances of them really being forgiving at that point are slim to none. So they've got two choices. They either have to, you know, be true to themselves and not say, I forgive you, which they're going to end up feeling guilty about, or they just kind of go along with the flow, and he said, I'm sorry, so I'm going to say I forgive you, but she, you know, he or she didn't really mean it. And so very often the typical apology of just, you know, launching these two words, I'm sorry, doesn't do much good. In fact, sometimes it's hurtful, because the one who has to apologize feels as though they've done their duty. And especially if the other one responds with, I forgive you. So they've kind of, you know, gone through the perfunctory steps, but in fact, there's been no true healing. And so they both end up feeling like it's done, but on an emotional level, it's really hasn't even started. And then, you know, unfortunately, what happens very often is people wake up 2, 3, 5, 10 years later, and, you know, there's still all that pain in their heart. They never really were able to forgive. They never really got over the hurt. And it's because the person, you know, took a very unsophisticated and simplistic approach to apologizing. I don't want to leave you hanging too much, so I will say, just in, you know, in terms of a little direction on how to, you know, that's how not to apologize. A little direction on how to apologize. Again, an effective apology is for the offender. Sorry, for the one who was offended, not for the offender. And what does a person who is hurt want? What do they need when they've been hurt? They want to be healed. They want to feel better. And what helps a person feel better when they're hurt? The answer is to be understood. When we're hurt, we want company. We want to feel that somebody else is sharing our pain. We want to feel that they're in my head thinking my thoughts, that they're in my heart feeling my pain, that they can cry my tear. when I feel that you, the offender who hurt me, now understands how your hurt caused me to feel, I feel better. And I also feel safe that you won't hurt me that way again. Because the whole reason why you hurt me that way to begin with was not because you're mean. It's not because you're malicious. It's because you really didn't understand how that was going to hurt me. And so an effective apology includes, there's many pieces, but a really effective apology includes demonstrating to your spouse how deeply you understand their pain. And that helps them heal, A, and B, it convinces them that you won't do it again. So it's just a little taste of, I couldn't totally leave you hanging with nothing.
No, thank you.
It's just a little taste of some of the elements of an effective apology. And once again, just like with trust, you know, here's something that people have such simplistic and abstract ideas about, you know, how to apologize, right? I mean, who, you know, did anybody ever train us? Did anybody ever teach us? Did we ever delve into really the psychological underpinnings of an apology and what works and what doesn't? I mean, who does that? You know, who thinks about it? You ask intelligent people. You know, what do you do when you hurt somebody? Well, you say, I'm sorry. Really? Does that work? You know? And so whether it's trust or apologies, there are real skills in how to survive and thrive in a marriage that are important to learn. And when we learn them, we're empowered to succeed. And if we don't, you can try all you want, but you'll crash.
Wow. You know, Mort, this has been unbelievable. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart, you know, to be here on our show today and, you know, to tell us all these fabulous things. And, you know, I hope our audience, you know, takes the time to plug into what you're doing. And, you know, what's the best way that they can connect with you again, Mort?
Yeah, well, the best way is to, you know, go to marriagemax.com. Again, 7 Secrets for Fixing Your Marriage is offered for free there. You just put in your name and email address. And my contact information is on the website if you want to call me and schedule an appointment, or you want to see the different marriage fitness programs that are offered. You know, if you're in marital crisis, you certainly want to do that. And, you know, feel free to just peruse my website, and you can get a sense for how you think I can help you.
And you have some assessment evaluations on there, too, for free, I believe, don't you?
Yeah, there's 5 free marriage assessments. When you actually sign up for the 7 Secrets for Fixing Your Marriage, you'll also get included there, the 5 free marriage assessments. You can also, mm-hmm. there's hundreds and hundreds of stories written by other people who have been in marital crisis and who have gone through the marriage fitness program, kind of telling their story about how they survived their situation and saved their marriage. Those are fascinating stories to read, and it's important for people that are in crisis to know that, you know, you're not alone. You're not the first one to be where you're at, and you don't have to be the, you know, you wouldn't be the first one to get out of it either. There is a way out. So anyway, thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. It was such a pleasure to have you on our show today, and thanks for taking time out of your day to be here with us. And before we end our show today, is there anything else that you'd like to share with us?
God bless everybody.
Oh, no, that's fabulous. Again, Mort, thank you so much for being here. And for our audience, this was Mort Fertel, and he is a marriage fitness expert. He can help you repair and fix your marriage. And we hope that you'll visit his website, again, marriagemax.com. And if you enjoyed our show today and you like what you've heard, we hope that you'll click on the Follow Us button that's located at AccomplishRadio.com and mark our show as one of your favorites. Tune in each weekday morning at 10 a.m. Central and start your day with us. You know, we hope that you really enjoy the guests that we bring onto our show to help you learn and discover more about how to accomplish more in your life, and especially this month being all about relationships. And Mort, thank you again for being here as our guest. It's a great time, especially with Valentine's Day coming up, for people to start working on their marriage.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. So this is Darlene Willman, and I'm wishing you a lifetime of accomplishments. Thanks for joining us today.